It's 8 p.m. na, and everything's set up on Discord, and we're good to record. It's the last episode of the season after all. Nasaan ka na?
Oh. Is it Sunday today? This is awkward. Kasi I forgot. And, okay, so here's the thing. I'm in Pampanga right now with my relatives. So, do you just want to do the episode while I'm here?
Ay nako, ito na naman eh. Sure. Sige. Let's roll the music.
Hey everyone, welcome to the Tusok Tusok Filipino Food Podcast, where we find out how food figures into everything in our lives.
Here in this podcast, we will deal you some interesting facts about the history and culture behind our food to start a more conscious discussion of our cuisine.
I'm Pat.
And I'm Matthew, the host of this show.
For this episode, I will take you through a little food trip in the culinary capital of the Philippines, Pampanga. And it just so happens that this is where my maternal relatives reside.
So for this episode, we'll talk about some kapampangan and general Filipino food customs, while I'm jealous to say that Pat will get to eat all of them. I'll be holding the fort down here in Parañaque and be the research and tech guy, like Wade from Kim Possible. With that, let me give you a quick rundown of what gave Pampanga the title of the culinary capital of the Philippines in the first place. There are many reasons as to why the region is dubbed as so. Historically speaking, Philippine Tourism Secretary Bernadette Romulo Puyat said that when Kapampangan men were sent to work in Cavite shipyards during the Spanish era, only women and children were left to take care of their homes. Kapampangan women kept food on the table by turning frogs and mole crickets into tasty dishes. This must be why so many of Kapampangans know their way around their kitchens. Another reason is that a slew of renowned chefs come from Pampanga. And almost any restaurant, big or small, seems to serve very good food. I have yet to visit the place, but I heard that anywhere naman in Pampanga, you can eat pretty good food. From our perspective today, we could also say that this is because of how much pride Kapampangas put into their cooking.
I can attest to that, actually. Ever since I was a kid, I've been surrounded by so much good food made by my own relatives. When I would come over to my lola's house, or nanay as we call her, there would automatically be delicious ulam waiting for me. And nanay's not one to repeat dishes, so it would always be different every day. I mean, preparing home-cooked meals every day wasn't really much of a problem because it feels like cooking is in our blood. I asked my tita Luz about where she learned how to cook or who she learned from, and she told me that she simply just started cooking. When everyone in your family knows how to, I guess it just comes as second nature. I mean, of course, there are exceptions, but it's a really good glimpse into what the cooking culture is like in Pampanga, or even in the Philippines in general. Which brings me to the first course of our food tour today. As an appetizer, my Tita Luz and Tita Doris helped me make ensaladang pako. Or I guess I helped them make ensaladang pako. As most salads go, making ensaladang pako was fairly simple. First, you picked off the young stalks of pako, or in English, a fiddlehead fern. The more mature ones are really tough kasi, so you have to pick the softer stems. Then you mix it in with some chopped tomatoes, itlog na pula, and a vinaigrette made out of cane vinegar, or suka, patis or fish sauce, and some honey simmered together. Top it off with crushed pieces of chicharon and you're good to go! You know, the salad was this balance of the punchy suka and the salty but earthy itlog na pula, mellowed out by the honey we added. Plus, it had this wonderful crunchy texture that I really liked. You know, pako is this tough green that has a mild flavor, so it made for a really good vehicle for all the other ingredients that had these standout flavors competing with each other.
You know, Pat, that reminds me of something I watched Claude Tayag serve Anthony Bourdain in one episode of his show, No Reservations. I'm not exactly sure if it's the same thing, but it looked really similar to the picture you sent over. Too bad the name of the salad they served wasn't mentioned. I think a lot of the time we overlook this aspect of our cuisine, no? I guess I'd say the vibrant vegetable culture here in the Philippines is highly underrated. When people mention Filipino cuisine or our regional cuisine, the star of the conversation is usually the meat or the stews that we serve.
But as an agricultural country, we Filipinos naturally have lots of dishes that incorporate our colorful bahay kubo of vegetables. And it's just important that we shout them out sometimes. You know, I'm not a vegetarian, but coincidentally, so many of my comfort foods are vegetable dishes. For example, like ginataang kalabasa, gising-gising, and now I guess ensaladang pako is part of that roster too. How about you, Matthew?
It's hard for me to kind of talk about which one is my favorite vegetables because I can't just choose one. I'm an absolute fan of vegetables and there's too many for me to choose. But if it came down to one vegetable, it would be the kangkong. Kangkong in when I was in college was really accessible to me and it was pretty easy to make in I don't know, in my room. It was just sauteing garlic oyster sauce and throwing kangkong in afterwards, and you'd have a pretty good vegetable dish or even a main dish if you wanted to. But I'm pretty sure what I made was unhealthy because I think I put too much oyster sauce. And I know that we give ampalaya a bad rap for its bitterness, but prepared properly, it's actually really good. A secret my mom taught me was to cut the ampalaya really thin into thin slices. And if you want to cut down on the bitterness as well, you cook it with scrambled eggs. Anyway, Pat, is the next dish ready now?
Not yet, but maybe while waiting, we can go on to this week's Share Ka Lang segment. I have a funny one prepared for you all. For our last episode's Share Ka Lang segment, I talked to my Tita Belle. Tita Belle is the best cook in our family, and every time I visit her, the ulam she'd serve would always be so good. So, I thought it would be nice to invite her on this special episode to ask her about her memories of Pampanga and some tips on how to cook as good as her someday. Hello, Tita Belle.
Hi. Hi, Patricia.
So, for starters, I mean, of course, we already know each other, pero do you want to introduce yourself to our listeners?
Oh, hi, I'm Annabelle. Tita o Patricia. Anderson.
Okay, so Tita Belle, where did you learn how to cook? Yun ang
Through
first
my
question ko.
nanay. Through my nanay. Since I'm 16 years old, I'm interested in cooking. So every time na mag-cook si nanay, your lola, interested akong tingnan kung ano niluluto niya, kung ano lasa. Siguro dahil doon, natuto ako magluto.
So just from watching, no? Parang nagustuhan mo na din magluto.
Oo. Yung interest ko magluto.
So, how long have you been cooking naman? Ganong katagal na?
I'm 61 years old. Nagkaroon ako ng interest magluto. Maybe I'm 16 years old din. How many years na yon? Ang tagal na.
And parang ever since then, parang naging assistant ka na ba ni nanay sa kusina?
Oo. Minsan nga, hindi na nga ako assistant. Ako na nga yung nakatuwa magluto.
Okay, so Tita Bel, nakwento mo na sa akin before, and you told me before na when you were all still kids, you used to visit the farm in Pampanga halos every
Every weekend.
weekend. It was kind of like your weekly outing, no? So what did the place look like then? Can you describe it?
Rice field. Pag sinabi mong rice field, parang pag tiningnan mo, ang lawak. Ang lawak. Parang ang sarap ng feelings kasi parang feel mo, ikaw lang tao. Fresh air. Tapos ang daming mga tanim. na-amaze kami sa mga mais, yung mga palay, ano ba itsura ng palay, kung yung iba patubo pa lang, yung iba i-harvest na, ang gandang tingnan. Tapos pupunta kami doon, yung meron na kaming i-harvest na peanuts, nagkakagulo kami kasi nakaka-enjoy na kumuha ng ganun pa lang peanut, ibubunutin mo lang siya, papagpag mo, lalagay mo sa isang lugar. Tawag dito, nag-uunahan kami dahil marami kaming mag-cousins na nandun. Kaya doon kami nag-i-enjoy.
So parang playtime din para sa inyo.
Oo,
yun.
Playtime. Talagang playtime. At the same time, nakaka-help kami sa uncle namin para paano mag-harvest.
And ano, you mentioned doon, nag-harvest kayo. And siguro naman after i-harvest, parang yun ba din yung linuluto para sa inyong mga bata?
Mm-mm. Plus yung kamote. Alam mo yung kamoting maliliit na kulay violet. Favorite namin yun. Kaya gusto namin mag-harvest ng kamote. Kasi sa province, uso kasi yung alam mo yung kalan na dikahoy?
Mm-mm.
Doon lang, das yung ano niya, may yung baga nung ano na yun na ng mga kahoy na ginawang doon namin iniitsa yung mga kamote, super tamis. Direct yung kakakuha lang namin kamote, iitsa lang namin sa mga baga noon. Hintay namin mang pumutok, kukunin na namin na may parang tong, kukunin namin, tigi-tigisa kami sa plate. Ay, ang sarap.
Kasi yun yung parang snack niyo, no?
Oo, snack namin yun. Parang nakakatuwa, nakaka-enjoy talaga.
Oh, so parang kumbaga, parang baked potato niyo yun
parang
dati.
Parang baked potato, tama ka.
Parang pero wala nang
potato.
Mga,
sweet
ano.
Sweet potato.
Mm-mm. Wala nang ibang ina-add, yun lang talaga.
Sugar, matamis kung gusto mo. Oo, oh, matamis na. Kaya lang, yung iba gusto nang pag binalatan mo may konting sugar, parang mas masarap. Plus yung ano, Patricia, meron kaming ano, kaping barako.
Oh, ang sarap naman.
Brewed coffee.
Ano gamit yung mag-brew ng coffee noon?
Simple lang yung takuli. Ilalagay namin doon, tapos may salaan si Lola. Isasala lang namin doon, tsaka kami kukuha. Ay, yung kanya palang ano, yung kettle niya, sa dulo niya meron ng ano, net. Para pag ginanyan mo, hindi sasama yung ano, yung pinaka ano, tawag nila sapal ng ano, ng brewed coffee, yung coffeeing ano, yun. Kaya talagang enjoy kami doon.
Parang ano no, parang makulay lahat ng parang memories mo ng mga food doon kasi
okay,
parang iba-iba yung hinahanda.
Excited na kami pag dumadating ang Friday kasi minsan Friday night nandoon na kami para umaga ng Saturday mag-uunahan na kami, gigising kami ng 4 o'clock, una-unahan kami, tawag dito, susundan namin yung uncle namin na papunta ng field, ng rice field. Kasi sa rice field, meron siya doon parang kubo na maliit. Doon siya nag-i-stay kasi para ano tawag dito. Para hindi siya mainitan, di ba? Doon siya nag-i-stay. So sa kubo na 'yon, may baon kami na almusal. Ay sinangag, or nilagang itlog na may uso na yung longganisa o daing na bangos. Exciting kasi doon kami kakain, nakakamay kami lahat. Kukuha lang siya ng dahon.
Nakainggit naman, Tabel. Kasi so ngayon, yun. It's not like that na ngayon, di ba? Hindi na ganun yung mukha ng farm.
Kung gusto mo makasakay sa Kalabaw, mas maaga kang gumising. Kasi dadalin ni uncle namin, yung tiyuhin mo, yung Kalabaw, kapag nauna ka, ikaw yung sasakay sa Kalabaw, bit-bit-bit-bit niya. Kaya ano... Eh kasi pag hindi ka ano, iikot siya, kami dadaan kami sa ang tawag nila pilapil. Ang pilapil, ganito lang ang dangkal. Isang dangkal lang. So kailangan hindi ka tatakbo ng mabilis. Eh kaya lang nag-uunahan kami, kailangan sino unang makarating dun sa kubo. Kaya para kaming tumutuloy sa alambre. Yung sa sa sinabi ko sa iyo kanina na pilapil, maliit lang 'yon. Kaya lang sinuwerte ako, nahulog ako doon yung isang paa ko. Hindi ko na makuha yung tsinelas ko kasi kung gusto mo makuha yung tsinelas mo, hindi mo maihahatak yung paa mo. Kailangan iwan mo yung slipper mo para maiangat mo sa putik yung paa mo. So doon ako natalo. Kaya bully pa yung mga pinsan, mga tiyahin mo bully.
Pumunta ka sa kanila, isa na lang tsinelas mo.
Oh, isa na lang. Kaya binubuli nila ako. Pagbalik ko, wala akong tsinelas. Pero exciting talaga. Exciting.
Sa lahat naman ng mga memories mo, Tabel, in Pampanga, what was your favorite food or what was your favorite thing to eat there?
Kasi si Lola, yung Lola namin, nanay-eat natin. Gusto niya kasi something na may soup. Mahilig siya sa sinigang. Sinigang, favorite namin, sinigang sa may puso ng saging. So sabi nila, sabi namin, bakit puti yung sabaw? Sabi namin. Sabi ni Lola, diyan mo malalaman kung ikaw, good cook ka, kapag yung sinigang sa puso ng saging, like bangos, eh naging milky yung sabaw. Ibig sabihin, good cook ka. Kasi may talagang sekreto doon para maging milky yung sabaw. Kulay gatas talaga. Alam mo kung ano secret?
Ano yung secret?
Gusto mong malaman ang secret?
Sige.
Ang secret kasi, para maging malagatas yung sabaw mo, kailangan kompleto na yung timpla. Yung asim, kailangan hindi sa huli. Kailangan timplado na pati asim bago mo ilagay yung tawag dito, yung puso ng saging. Pero hindi basta-basta, huwag mo munang ihiwain. Pag ilalagay mo na siya, kulong-kulong na yung sabaw, tsaka mo palang ikakat yung puso ng saging mabilis. Para pag-cut mo, lagay agad. At ilulubog mo kaagad siya. Ilulubog mo para doon lalabas yung katas na puti. Yung pinaka siguro yung puti, yun yung dagta ng tawag dito.
Yung parang sap.
Oo. Pag nilagay mo yon, kailangan yung sandok, igagalaw-galaw mo siya para lumabas yung pinakakatas niya.
Mm-mm.
Kaya, yung iba kasi, di ba, nilalagay muna yung mga gulay bago pa asim. Yun, kailangan timplado ka na bago mo ilast na ilagay yung puso ng saging.
Recap natin para sa mga nakikinig. Yung tips mo, hindi lang naman ako nakikinig. Kung may mga nakikinig din sa...
ikaw lang. Okay.
Kung may nakikinig din sa podcast, sige, recap natin. Na kapag good cook ka, yung test ay...
Milky sinigang mo sa puso. With paasim yun, ah. With sampalok, okay.
Tapos, yung steps nun is dapat unahin lahat muna ng sampalok.
Simplado na lahat, pati yung paasim niya, yung sinasabi nila.
Kumbaga, yung final ingredient.
Final
ingredient, yung puso ng saging. Okay.
Oo.
So, yun lang naman.
Before we get to the episode, a quick word from our sponsor.
Gusto ko lang mag-sharing.
The Mamacita Foundation's Heirloom Grains Project promotes the centuries-old traditions of farming the many different varieties of heirloom rice in the Cordillera region.
Okay, so thank you.
The heirloom rice champorado is an opportunity for everyone to have a taste of tradition while supporting the communities who harvest the grains. The heirloom rice champorado is available in Omino, Minaagan, Kalingajekot, and Balatinao variants. You can purchase these online in Lazada, Shopee, the Mamacita's website, on Viber, and on the Mamacita's Recipes Facebook page. Like the Mamacita Foundation's Facebook page for more information on other advocacies that bring the best of the Philippines culinary heritage to the world. And we're back on this food tour.
For the second course, we look at the widely loved meat dish that is tocino. commonly, tocino is treated as a breakfast food, no? But as the iconic food writer Doreen Fernandez wrote in her widely acclaimed book of essays, Tikim, the Filipino breakfast is unique as it's not too different from all the other meals in the day, which means that we have really loose rules over what we eat at any time of the day. There's no strict food that's only for breakfast. You know, you can eat anything at any time of the day. This is why then we could have tocino for dinner. Except we had it with a spin. Instead of using pork, the tocino we had was made out of carabao meat. In Pampanga, the dish is simply called pindang. Unlike the other dishes on that day, we didn't marinate or cure our pindang on our own. My relatives bought it at the local market pre-made, so we only had to let it boil in a bit of water until tender, and then they added some oil to fry it, and then it was served. You know, while waiting for it to tenderize, my tita told me that these things usually take time to make. There's a process of curing and fermentation involved in making pindang, which gives its characteristic hint of sourness. You know, a true blue Kapampangan would know that when it comes to preserved meats like tapa or tocino, there's always the sweet kind which most would prefer, including me, and the sour kind, which is an acquired taste.
Pampanga is really well known for its cured meats. Even here in our grocery stores, one of the best brands of tocino or tapa you can get is the quote-unquote Pampanga's best brand. I guess you could say these methods of preservation are embedded in the culture of that region. Another preserved food item from Pampanga and in some parts of Rizal is burro. Burro can be many things. As with most delicacies in the Philippines, this name is derived from the technique that the cooks use. In this case, it's a pickling or brining method used in a variety of seafood or fruits. As written in Yummy PH, there's burong mangga or pickled mangoes, burong mustasa or pickled mustard leaves, and burro that is fermented rice-based. And the book Kain Na, written by Feliz Pradeta Santa Maria and Brian Ko, specifically talk about using thumb-sized paho varieties of mangoes in burro. Even mentions burong labanos or brined radish. I guess almost any fruit or vegetable with enough toughness or integrity can be made into burro, huh? With any preserved dish, though, there's usually copious amounts of salt or vinegar involved, and that makes for condiments, meats, and fishes that have a strong, concentrated taste. That's why most of these dishes are paired well with a simple cup of white rice that's cooked the right way.
I guess this is also part of the reason why Filipinos love rice so much, no? It's a great counterbalance to these ulam that really pack a punch. But did you also know that there was a functional reason why we had so many of these foods that are preserved and dried in a myriad of ways? Similar to the food history of other countries around the world, the practice of preserving and pickling food come from the need to stretch out resources. You know, we didn't always have refrigerators to keep our food fresh, and these methods happened to stave off decomposition and moldy growths that cause diseases. When my relatives and I were cooking, I was curious as to why carabao, or carabeef as some others would call it, was a relatively popular type of meat to use. I suspect that it also had to do with surviving the Japanese occupation era. As Soledad Lainez, I hope I'm saying her last name right, writes in The Culinary Culture of the Philippines, fresh foods like chicken, beef, and pork were available but in very limited amounts at the markets. So the meat used was more often than not carabeef.
Not all efforts to preserve food during that period of time were successful though. In that same piece by Lainez, they recounted that during the second year of the Japanese occupation, the food shortage began to be felt. While various modes of food preservation were used, foods like balbacoa fish laid in salt still got infested by maggots. Slabs of bacon or entocino became rancid and tough because of too much salting. And daing or salted dry fish became hard and tasteless too. This caused the housewives then to be even more thorough with how they cleaned and preserved their foods, especially rice. As Lena's piece continues, they enumerate how rice was prevented from being infested from weevils and worms. It involved this laborious process of picking out all the insects, one by one, until their bag of rice was deemed clean and ready to dry outside. It's kind of like bringing to life the saying, finding the needle in a haystack, except the needle is a tiny insect, and it could ruin your family's meals for the rest of the week, maybe a month if you hoarded even more back then.
Needless to say, from that anecdote, you can also see another facet of how important rice is in our food culture. More than a pairing for the main ulam, it could be used for many other dishes too. This brings us now to the last dish for this food tour. It's not the traditional kind of food you would picture in your head as the dessert, but it still falls into that sticky and sweet category. The last dish I prepared with my relatives was bikong kalabasa.
Teka, biko and kalabasa? You know, I have had biko many times before, but isn't squash supposed to be a savory food? What's going on here?
Well, you'd be surprised to know that squash actually matches well with a lot of desserts. One of the interesting things I observed in Asian culture in general is that we can find a lot of supposedly savory ingredients in our sweets. And I think it gives an interesting challenge as to how we perceive the rules we give to our food.
Oo nga, no? You know, for example, sesame seeds can be sprinkled on our favorite Korean dishes such as kimchi fried rice, bibimbap, but it can also give an earthy balance to sweeter dishes. We can find it ground and mixed into sugar we sprinkle in our palitao. And in Japan, we find a lot of black sesame-flavored ice cream and other dairy products too. Cheese that you can dip grilled samgyeopsal into or fill a golden pork tonkatsu with can also be found in ice cream in various forms.
One of my personal favorites that can be found in Manila though is Lola Nene's triple cheese donuts. Recently, some of my friends gifted me a box full of them, and they were so good. It's this regular filled donut coated in sugar and margarine, but when you bite inside it, this creamy and oozy cheese spills out. You could say goodbye to your diet with it, actually.
And kind of related to something we shared in the last episode, avocado can be found on toast and in sorbetas too. I guess that brings us to your talk about kalabasa, squash. Now that you remind me of it, I first encountered this being used in a dessert because of a Japanese baking YouTube channel that I subscribe to. The channel is called Chocolate Cacao if you guys want to check them out. Anyway, one of their videos was about a white chocolate squash Mont Blanc cake for Halloween. My initial reaction was confusion, but then as I watched the video, my mouth started watering. My initial reaction was confusion. But then as I watched the video, my mouth started to water. Squash in a dessert. Pwede pala yun.
And bikong kalabasa is Pampanga's affirmative to that question. Among all the dishes we cooked in that weekend, this one took the most amount of time because first, we had to make latik from scratch. Then cook the freshly harvested kaning malagkit or glutinous rice in coconut milk. And then cook the sliced pieces of squash in a pan of brown sugar and some more coconut milk. And then we had to mix it all together and let it set in a bilao oiled from the coconut oil we made from earlier when we made the latik. It was this really long process that seemed fairly simple at the start. But when you actually do it, you realize that there's a lot of waiting and manual labor involved. The product was so worth it though, as it gave this orange-hued biko that was sweet, but not overbearingly so. You know, the sugar didn't mask the taste of the squash at all. In fact, it complemented it so that the biko had more than just one dimension of flavor. There's this dissonance at first for me, because I know this taste, it's familiar to me. It's like my comfort food, ginataang kalabasa, but it's in a dessert. And weirdly enough, it tastes good. It's kind of like being used to eating cheese in sandwiches all your life and then suddenly realizing it tastes so good in ice cream din pala.
You know, Pat, you have to make me try it next time we see each other. I'm a big sucker for Filipino kakanin. All kinds of it. You did memorize how to make it, right?
Yeah, of course I took notes. The thing is though, when my relatives baker cook, their measurements are kind of unusual. They measure with the things they already use in their kitchens, and there's a lot of eyeballing involved. So, kunyari, their 1 cup of coconut milk or glutinous rice there is actually measured with a glass that they use. The problem with that is it's not standardized, so I don't have that same glass that I can use at home.
You know, that's exactly what makes our culture diverse. there's no constant or standard measurements with most of our cooking. If you ask someone how to make a dish, they would say, minamata ko lang, or they'd usually taste as they go. This is also why one dish may look and taste different from different households, but technically is and can still be the same thing.
So that's why my tita's adobo looks entirely different from my mom's adobo.
Yep. While it makes cooking Filipino dishes really accessible, we also run the risk of not having a singular identity to a dish. Pero some people would consider that the very charm of Filipino cooking, no? But I guess in the conversation about making these parts of our culture more tangible, we need to be able to know the specific amounts of ingredients that each person puts into a dish. That's how we are able to preserve our cultural heritage, and in a smaller scale, our own family's heritage.
It's why I also felt the need to ask so many questions and take so many notes while my Tita Luz was preparing the biko. I tried making it myself recently with the ingredients I could buy here, and I felt proud of myself when I finished it. Weirdly enough, even though I've lived in Manila all my life, it made me feel a bit closer to my Kapampangan roots. Ang cheesy naman no, but that's how I felt. I think this would be a good spot to finish our last episode of the season 2, no?
Yeah, you toured us around 3 different Kapampangan foods. We heard a few funny stories from your tita and lola, and we got to delve a little deeper into the relevance behind each of those dishes. And I think that's it for this week's episode of Tusok Tusok.
The last of the season, you know? So we hope we'll be back for more. Again, I'm Pat.
And I'm Matthew. We'll see you when we see you. This episode was produced by Matthew Yuching and Patricia Villoria. It was also written and researched by Patricia Villoria. Music was composed by Riley Ugarte. Sound editing was done by Matthew Yuching. And graphic design was done by Genesis and Galilita. Thank you for listening to the first season of Tusok Tusok, a Filipino food podcast. We hope to see you next time.